Chapter 36. The Zimmerman Telegram. No one has ever understood very well what took place in the United States at the time of the Zimmerman Telegram affair, except that it was responsible for turning the American people in favor of war. It was said at the time that Germany had proposed an alliance with Mexico. For the Europeans of 1917, Mexico was a little bit like Papua, they knew very little about it. They had a vague notion of bandits, sombreros, and cactus. Few people had any knowledge of Mexico's culture or its history. The Americans, on the other hand, had a far greater awareness of Mexico. Mexico had lost half its territory to the United States. Mexicans still grieved in 1917 for the relatively recent loss of Texas, California, Nevada, Arizona, and parts of Wyoming and Colorado. To them, it was not only their land but their Hispanic heritage that had been taken away. For centuries, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego, Salinas, Sacramento, Albuquerque, Pueblo, Alamogordo, El Paso, San Antonio, Amarillo were wonderful names that had been a part of them and very much remained in their patriotic consciousness. Americans, however, were now living in the former Hispanic provinces and did not take kindly to anything resembling a Mexican claim. There was fear and resentment on both sides of the border. There was renewed resentment, and the United States Navy occupied the Mexican port of Veracruz, and General Pershing led an army into Mexican territory. In those days, it did not take much to bring in the U.S. gunboats. At the slightest sign of unrest, American troops were sent to restore order. After 1900, the United States invaded Nicaragua, Honduras, the Dominican Republic, Cuba, and in 1916, Mexico. Without too much worry about the rights of self-determination, the Wilson administration presided over the invasion of Haiti in 1915, the Dominican Republic and Nicaragua in 1916. Just as Louisiana and Alaska had been purchased earlier, the administration bought the Virgin Islands from Denmark. It is not an act of Yankee baiting to recall such imperialism, but rather a matter of stating historical facts. Professor Bowen, director of the American Geographical Society, made the point candidly: since the annexation of the Hawaiian Islands, the United States have spread their influence and control over new territories faster than any other power, including Imperial Russia. From 1908 to 1917, there were 11 annexations, protectorates, purchases extending over 500,000 square miles. It was impressive. The United States, like all other great powers, had not forged their unity by handing out candy to their neighbors. They had used force, even on their own citizens in the southern states. The Indians had been forcibly removed from their tribal lands until they no longer were a factor. While President Wilson talked of freedom of the seas and the rights of self-determination to the people of Europe, he refrained from dwelling on that subject on the home front. In 1917, the United States invaded Mexican territory, and there was little debate on human rights. As for the Germans, who felt the United States might attack them at any moment, it is possible they might have had some interest in allying themselves with Mexico. They had seen France seek an alliance with Russia against their country. They had seen the British turn to Japan in 1914 and urge the Japanese to declare war on Germany. It is therefore conceivable that Germany wished to keep American troops on the Mexican border. A conflict would have diverted American troops and resources away from Europe. German interests and Mexican nostalgia for its lost provinces could provide the basis of a Mexican-German alliance against a British-American coalition. As to whether such a Mexican-German alliance was ever consummated, the answer is negative. No treaty was ever signed at any time. It may have been considered, but even that is conjectural. The possibility was based solely on the content of the Zimmerman telegram, of which the dispatch and interception have remained clouded with mystery to this day. The exploitation of this dubious document shook America to its foundation. The Allies had finally hit the jackpot, the break house had worked and waited for so long. The Zimmerman telegram burst out of shadows of intrigue. In February 1917, one of House's men, Frank Polk, telephoned his boss, the British Admiralty has intercepted and decoded a sensational telegram sent by the German foreign minister to his ambassador in Mexico, Herr Eckhart. He did not know the content but believed it was to the effect that Eckhart had been instructed to conclude a German-Mexican alliance whereby Germany would help Mexico recover Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona. The phone call was very strange. There was confusion as to the source of the information, which to this day has not been cleared up. First, the British Admiralty was supposed to have intercepted the telegram, then followed a second version, and a third and a fourth version, all contradicting each other. Professor Seymour examined the event. A messenger carrying the telegram had been apprehended by our border patrol near the Mexican border. We, U.S. intelligence operatives, made a copy of the dispatch sent to Halifax among Bernstorff's papers. The dispatch was hidden in a mysterious trunk which the British seized. These different versions were floating around Washington when House added yet another variant. He had not been informed by Polk, but by Blinker Hall, chief of British Naval Intelligence. It was Blinker Hall who pulled off this coup. He decoded the telegram and sent it to us. House, 2, 498. 50 years later, Professor Renouvin offered another explanation. The coded message was sent to New York by the American ambassador in Berlin and transmitted on the British cable line. This last version is just as bizarre as the others and does little to dispel the confusion. Many people expressed doubts as to the authenticity of this document, said Professor Seymour. One fact, however, remained. House was on record, the 26th day of February 1917, as stating the information had come from a phone call. He did not at that time have the original document or a copy of it, nor did he have the testimony of a direct witness. It has also been established that the British didn't intercept the telegram at the German embassy in Mexico. House's declaration on February 26 was based on hearsay and lies. The way in which this dispatch was intercepted provides fuel for endless conjectures, wrote Professor Seymour. A number of Washington observers were puzzled by the time sequence of the affair. The telegram was dated January 16, 1917. House revealed its existence on February 26. 40 days had elapsed. Why would the British air at House have waited 40 long days to release news that would bring America closer to war? For them, time was of the essence. Deliberations over dates and facts did not bother House and Polk. The only thing that mattered was to use the telegram, unverified as it was, to anger and panic the American people into the war. Mr. Polk, wrote Seymour, thoroughly exploited this communication. The publication of the Berlin telegram would change irritation into rage. It would strengthen enormously the support people would give Wilson in any action he might take against Germany. Thus, this highly suspicious document, which many believe today to have been cooked up by British espionage operatives who are specially trained in the art of forgery and provocation, was waved in Wilson's face by House as irrefutable proof of German perfidy. Somehow the Zimmermann telegram left Wilson skeptical. He wondered whether just a phone call offered enough evidence. He had seen no proof of its authenticity and felt uneasy. Besides, said Seymour, Wilson was troubled that the publication of the dispatch might trigger a crisis he could not control. House harassed the president. He demanded the dispatch be released for immediate publication. On the following day, February 27, House wrote to Wilson, "I hope you will publish the dispatch tomorrow. It will make a profound impression on Congress and the whole country." House, 2, 497. House was so sure the president would do as he was asked that he cabled Ambassador Page in London, "As far as we are concerned, we already are at war." Despite all the pressure, Wilson hesitated. House became frantic. "X called me twice from Washington. The president's inertia worries him greatly. Like Lansing, he wants me to come to Washington in order to push Wilson into action." House, 2, 505. House had become the Moses of the pro-war lobby. All the war lobbyists would turn to House as the only man who could be relied on to direct the president's will, wrote Seymour. In his note, dated March 27, House wrote that he had gone to hustle Wilson. He, the president, confessed to me he did not feel up to assuming high presidential functions at such a critical time. Then House begged the question, what is needed is a man made of tougher stuff, with a less philosophical mind than Wilson. A man who can conduct a brutal war. House, 2, 510. Who could this man be except House? Wilson spoke nobly during America's last days of peace. America's entry into the war will mean that we are losing our heads like the others. It will mean the majority of people in this hemisphere are falling prey to the insanity of war and are no longer thinking. Once the people are at war, they will forget there was such a thing as tolerance. What a frightful responsibility it is to have to lead our great peaceful people in the most terrible war, the most devastating that has ever befallen the world and which appears to sap the very core of civilization. During the month of March, House would mercilessly pursue the peace idealist. The president was no match for the relentless House and finally gave in. On April 6, 1917, the president went to Capitol Hill with clenched teeth and announced that America had declared war. The reason for our action will not be vengeance. We do not want to affirm by a victory the material strength of the United States, we simply want to defend the rights of humanity of which we are the only champions. House, 2, 514. As stirred as they were by Allied propaganda and the Zimmerman telegram, the American people were still wondering whether they had been told the truth. House complained that Americans just could not get the message. The Germans had to fight the country which they had done everything to keep out of the war. It was a severe blow, which they hoped would be offset by the overthrow of the Russian Empire. The Tsar's abdication on March 15, 1917 did not end the war between Russia and Germany. As dispirited as the Russian armies were, the war went on. The Kerensky regime did not cease hostilities, and managed to keep more than 1 million German soldiers away from the Western Front. American intervention made it imperative for Germany to make peace with Russia. Germany's survival depended on how long it would take to disengage its army from Russia, and how long it would take for American troops to cross the Atlantic.